And a cheerful good morning to everyone. This is Roy Porter in the NBC newsroom in New York, and we should be cheerful this morning no matter what the state of the world, because spring is here, coming in at exactly 22 seconds after 13 minutes past 6 o'clock this morning Eastern Standard Time. We'll do a fast run today, Moscow, Cairo, London, and Washington, with most of the international news carrying on where we left it yesterday. First, a word from your announcer, then I'll be back with your world news roundup.
The years during and after the war have seen a growing expansion in the use of hospitalization plans, industrial clinics, public health services, and the techniques of preventive medicine. As a result, the need for trained nurses is greater now than ever before. In general hospital staff work, medical laboratory work, psychiatric nursing, and the Veterans Administration. This means thousands of jobs at good pay in one of the most honored professions. Right now, more than 1,300 accredited schools of nursing offer a three-year training course to qualify women as graduate nurses. If you're between 18 and 35, a high school graduate, or a college student in good standing and in good health, you may be eligible. For full information, get in touch with your local hospital or nearest school of nursing. Now back to the NBC Newsroom and the World News Roundup.
This is another question day in Washington, Moscow, and various other places, including Athens and Ankara, and these questions are becoming more and more pointed on one general subject. What is the basis, the detailed basis, of the American proposal to help Greece and Turkey? Of course, the item of $400 million provokes some of the queries, but the overall question of what will this lead to is building up into a more important consideration. Today we're going to hear from Washington and Moscow and the angles being developed in those places, and we may have an indication on the status of the Greek situation. New York is getting ready to provide United Nations reaction, which apparently is going to be along the line that the international body is not yet ready to tackle such a problem, which carries both diplomatic and military possibilities. Meanwhile, activities in other parts of the world continue, not completely divorced from the present international dilemma. The government fight against guerrillas in Greece is underway. The communist-inspired rebels in Paraguay have brought fighting, minor, that's true, but still fighting, to the capital of Asunción. The Big Four conference turns to Austria as its main subject. London hears that Foreign Secretary Bevan is getting ready to lay down the law to Generalissimo Stalin. The Albanians finally have asked for a chance to explain the mining of the Corfu Channel to offset the British charge that it was done deliberately. And the proposed reorganization of political parties in occupied Germany has split the four-power control authority, with the United States and Britain on one side and France and Russia on the other. So in the midst of all this, let's get the latest report from the Big Four conference. Come in, Robert Magidoff in Moscow.
The Council of Foreign Ministers is now taking up the question of Austria. This question was sixth and last on the agenda, but has been moved up because Molotov requested a 48-hour delay on the problem the ministers were to discuss this afternoon. That was the problem of a political organization of Germany. Secretary Marshall announced he would today propose to the foreign ministers to invite the Austrian government to send representatives to the conference. The proposal may bring about another controversy because Molotov is expected to oppose this suggestion. If, however, the procedure on Austria takes little time, the ministers will return to the problem of the form and scope of a political organization of Germany. Both Bevan and Bido are prepared to present the views of their governments. Bevan will advance the British view in the form of a paper which he will elaborate. The British plan, it is reliably anticipated, would call for a provisional German constitution to be approved by the Allied Control Council. The constitution is to be subject to amendment after trial, followed by new elections if necessary. The British plan is likely to include proposals for a president and two chambers, one representing the nation as a whole, the other representing separate German provinces. A Supreme Court is to be established to safeguard the constitution. Bevan's recommendations will probably reserve certain matters for the jurisdiction of the Allied Control Council for an unstated period. These include nine subjects: demilitarization, disarmament, decartelization, security, reparations, prisoners of war, displaced persons, war criminals, and finally, foreign exchange control. Bido is expected to oppose emphatically a strong central government for Germany, whether provisional or otherwise. This is Robert Magidoff in Moscow.
The situation in the Middle East has a spotlight on it these days, and especially the guerrilla hunt, which is on in Greece. Let's get the latest developments on this explosive problem from John Donovan in Cairo.
Great interest has been centered on the acting Secretary of State, Dean Acheson's remarks before the House of Representatives yesterday. The Middle East followed Mr. Acheson's statement carefully because of his reference to those countries to the east and the south of Turkey. In Greece, the rebels are looking to Washington to see how quickly and how effectively the United States acts on President Truman's request for emergency aid to Greece. The immediate effect of President Truman's statement of a new foreign policy for the United States has been to halt the spring offensive planned by the rebels against the Greek government. This winter, while in the Macedonian mountains with the Greek guerrillas, rebel chieftains told me of their plans for an all-out revolution which would carry them to Athens. At that time, the rebels were getting stronger every day. Peaceful villagers, driven to the mountains by the stupid and oppressive measures of the government gendarmerie, were joining the Andarte bands in large numbers. The British government had announced that they planned to reduce the number of troops in Greece and ultimately evacuate all British forces by August 1947. For the present, this announcement is unconfirmed by the British Foreign Office. A large majority of the non-communist Greek rebels have been so discouraged by President Truman's support of the Greek government that many of them could be induced to accept an amnesty supervised by an international authority. Hardly any of the rebels trust an amnesty granted by the Greek government, for the battle has become a feud and a vendetta. There are men fighting among the rebels and the gendarmerie, not for political or economic reasons, but because their families have been killed by the other side. Usually, every gendarme captured by the rebels is a dead gendarme, and every rebel is treated by the authorities as a murderer and a communist. So even though rebellion in Greece is now virtually hopeless, fear will keep many rebels in the mountains. This is John Donovan in Cairo.
New gale warnings are up in England today, and despite the advent of spring, conditions in the flooded area are reported worsening. For the story, let's go to Merrill Muller in London.
Only in the Midlands farm districts, known as the Fens, did Britain's flood crisis increase today. The River Ouse continues to pour through breaches in its banks and drive more families and livestock to higher ground, while army and civilian engineers work day and night to repair the banks with temporary steel retaining walls. Emergency flood services continue to work most effectively in all districts, rescuing marooned families, rehousing and feeding them. Farmers are also caring for cattle, sheep and poultry that are being driven to safer pastures. All the other rivers in flood, having passed the record high water levels of 100 to 150 years old, are reported either steady or dropping slightly today. But the worst is not yet over, and gale warnings are in effect today on all British coasts. Melting snows in the hills, the overnight heavy rain and high spring tides are expected to create a maximum flood situation over the weekend, after which there should be marked improvements. Farmers' councils today reported a fear that Britain had already lost 90% of her spring crops, which would produce a near famine in vegetables for at least 3 months. Britain simultaneously learned of another loss today, a 12% drop in her vital export trade for the month of February, a drop which did not reflect any loss as a result of the winter fuel crisis, but was due to the short month, bad weather, and shipping delays. Britain's February exports were $304 million, just equal to her 1938 average, which must be surpassed by 75% to meet the planned economic targets of the socialist government. This shows a loss of $60 million, no part of which is likely to be made up in March or April because of the fuel crisis. To help eliminate the coal crisis, I learned today that the British Cabinet has put a high priority on the conversion of all mainline railways to oil-burning locomotives, all British ships to diesel turbine power, as well as all electrical power stations which are convertible. And it is again likely that domestic consumers will hear in the House of Commons next week of rationing on gas, electricity, and coal. This is Merrill Muller in London.
The State Department marked the documents secret, but Dean Acheson handed them out to a congressional committee. The facts inside? That's what some congressmen want to discuss openly and in public. Here's Lee Feed in Washington.
This morning, Dean Acheson, the acting Secretary of State, must be brooding over the hard life of a diplomat in the land of the free. You hand a document marked secret to a committee of Congress, and right away the members want to tell everybody what's in it. The document's background information on Greece and Turkey, and we suppose about American policy in that part of the world, which might include some roundabout references to our hold-that-line policy against Russia. Acheson handed copies to the committee yesterday to bolster the case for $400 million worth of help to the Greeks and Turks, and also, presumably, to show that the State Department is taking Congress into full confidence on the reasons behind the new Truman Doctrine. There might be enough material here for a full week's editorials in Izvestia and Pravda about dollar diplomacy. But the leaders of Congress want full public support in their backing of the president and no charges that they're plotting with the State Department in ways unbecoming to a democracy. So Chairman Eaton of the House Foreign Affairs Committee says there's only one way to handle the situation, and that's to make all the facts public. He doesn't agree with Acheson that there's anything in that secret document that's dangerous to let out or that John Q. Citizen shouldn't know. Acheson will have to make up his mind this morning. We have three grades of state secrets down here. One is confidential, stuff you can tell anybody, but not publish. Secret is just sort of medium secret. You just let your friends read it. And then there's top secret, not even for your mother-in-law. This document is just secret, so Eaton may be right. Otherwise, in Washington, today, for the third day in a row, the Senate swears it's going to get to a vote on the portal pay bill. This morning, a poll shows a majority of the Senate will vote to okay David Lilienthal as atomic chairman. Today, the Agriculture Department says the wheat crop this year will be nearly 40% above the 10-year average. And this morning, Representative McDowell says that in New York, he's discovered what may be the start of a new German-American bund, talking about, quote, a just peace for Germany, unquote. This is Leif Eaton in Washington.
And here's news from all over the globe. Lucky Luciano, the former New York vice lord, left Havana, Cuba on his second deportation from the Western Hemisphere with the unexplained statement, I intend to return to the United States when the present government is no longer in power. Luciano was deported to his native Italy the first time in 1946. Charles Luizet, the head man of the Paris police force, has been ousted from his job because he failed to purge his organization of so-called collaborationists. Luizet has held the post since before the liberation of the French capital, and relief and health operations supervised by UNRWA will wind up in China by the end of this month. There's more news. I'll be back in a moment. Now, here's your announcer.
The American Red Cross did tremendous service for our fighting men during the war years, but the job is not yet over. These men who fought our battle for us are now back home, and many still need help in regaining their place in community life. And it is here that the Red Cross can play its part in finishing the job it began more than 5 years ago. For the newly returned veteran, the Red Cross is ready not only with practical and constructive advice, but actual financial aid in case of need. Then there are the thousands of veterans recovering from war wounds in our hospitals. In all these hospitals, Red Cross volunteer workers bring the wounded men welcome diversion in the form of sightseeing tours, arts and crafts projects, and shopping, letter writing, and library services. The Red Cross must carry on during 1947 and needs $60 million for the purpose. So to help the men back from the war, to help your own hometown, give freely and generously to the American Red Cross. Now back to Roy Porter in the newsroom.
A story from London says that the Moscow radio has asserted today that in a Russian-language broadcast, most American newspapers are ignoring the growing opposition in the country to President Truman's proposals to aid Greece and Turkey. And they cite the statements made by Henry Wallace and Vito Marcantonio of the American Labor Party. Have you ever heard of where the Wendell Walkers live somewhere in Woodstock, Vermont? Well, Sunday, they had a fire in the basement. Monday, there was a blaze under a staircase. Tuesday, flames broke out upstairs. Wednesday, the Walkers said, enough is enough, and they moved out. Yesterday, fire destroyed the house. Today, oh, today it's spring. That's your World News Roundup for this morning. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow, so until then, this is Roy Porter wishing you a very good morning from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
It's NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. From Washington, economic blockade of Soviet Russia. Also, Acheson agrees, security is the objective. From Moscow, Molotov takes another Bevin Marshall 1-2 punch.
And from Washington again, a queen no less proves it's spring. Now a brief message from Tom Moore.
Have you noticed that lots of folks have colds these days? Well, if you happen to be one of those unfortunate people with a miserable cold, don't forget Alka-Seltzer's easy, pleasant ABC cold comfort treatment. Remember how it goes? A, Alka-Seltzer.
Take Alka-Seltzer at once for prompt relief from the miserable, ache-all-over, feverish feeling.
B, be wise.
Beware of drafts. Be sure to get more rest than usual.
C, comfort.
Comfort the raspy, sore throat caused by your cold by gargling with Alka-Seltzer.
That's Alka-Seltzer's easy, pleasant, fast ABC cold comfort treatment. So follow it for relief from much of your distress if you have a miserable cold. Keep an extra 30 or 60 cent size package of Alka-Seltzer handy all the time. For remember, an extra package on the side keeps a family well supplied. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you Morgan Beatty and News of the World.
Beginnings toward an economic blockade of Soviet Russia by both the British and the American governments were made today with threats of more of the same to come. In Berlin, American and British authorities suspended all iron and steel shipments out of our zones into the Russian zone. The order hit the Soviets where it hurts most, in transport. They need rails. And in rehabilitation, where all sorts of steel bars are urgently required. More significantly, the decision came on the day that both Britain and the United States renewed pressure in the Foreign Ministers' Conference for a start toward setting up a German government. Henry Cassidy will report on that direct from Moscow in a few moments. Economic pressure starts also on the day when our State Department agrees that the basic point behind aid to Greece and Turkey is the other half of economic blockade against Russia. Namely, it's designed to help nations threatened by external pressure that could come only from Russia. Dean Acheson, Undersecretary of State, admitted dramatically today that the basic purpose of our present active policy is designed to protect the security of the United States, ultimately. Richard Harkness will give you details shortly. But there's more of the same in other quarters on Capitol Hill. A civilian production official, John C. Houston, was questioned today about our export policy. Do you favor, asked Representative Kim, the Missouri Republican, do you favor exportation of our machinery to Russia and its satellites under present conditions? Mr. Kim actually was asking the witness whether he favored economic blockade of Russia. The government witness saw the point, dodged the question, naturally, on the ground that he's not making national policy. But he agreed that as far as he personally is concerned, he'd send exports where they would do us the most good. All of these developments tie into our official denial yesterday of grain to Yugoslavia, a Russian satellite country. And there's some evidence that the new American policy of economic tit-for-tat is backfiring behind Russian lines in Eastern Europe. Illegal broadcasts have been heard in the Balkans, condemning the Tito government. They seem to be coming from the remnants of forces left behind by Tito's old and condemned enemy, Mihailovich. And here's other top news. Domestically, for the benefit of those of you who've been writing snippy letters to Congress, the Republican majority got underway today with a do-something program. The Senate majority snowballed the Democrats with a bill to outlaw portal-to-portal pay suits. The vote, 64 to 24. If the House agrees, the measure will knock the props out from under $6 billion worth of claims filed by labor unions. And it would forbid any more such. It's based on the general idea that changing overalls is a personal matter, not a part of the law of the land. The House also passed a bill to extend rationing and price control of sugar, at least until November of this year. The government would still divvy up scarce sugar until the spring of 1948 under the measure. The Senate still must act. And a Senate subcommittee approved today continued rent control without a general increase in the landlord's reward. But we note that this is the action of a sub-sub-sub-group. It's a long way from final decision. The Civil Aeronautics Board approved today an agreement among 16 airlines for a 10% increase in fares. So, it'll cost you slightly more than 5 cents a mile to see the pretty hostess smile, instead of 4.6 cents on the mile. Speaker Joe Morton of the House of Representatives sounded the tocsin tonight for Republican support generally of a $4 billion tax cut. A cut, he said, is absolutely necessary in a special statement issued only 15 minutes ago. He spoke out after his Ways and Means Committee in the House gave a 16-9 vote of approval for the new 2030 tax cut bill, which we explained yesterday. That's 30% for the little fellow under 3,000, 20% for the people with the folding money. And now for that report we promised on why the United States proposes to aid Greece and Turkey, here's Richard Harkness.
Well, along with an economic blockade of Soviet Russia, Undersecretary of State Dean Acheson made it plain today that in backing up Greece and Turkey, we would add an ideological blockade around communism. NBC broadcast this session of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. This was radio history, the first direct broadcast of any regular congressional proceeding. To take you to this hearing today, here are the recorded questions on communism put by Representative Judd of Minnesota with Mr. Acheson's answers.
I understand that our major reason in this for proposing and adopting this legislation is our belief that it would be dangerous to the security of the United States to have communist-dominated governments developing in Greece and Turkey. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, would it or would it not be dangerous to the security of the United States to have a communist-dominated government on the Pacific in China?
I think we should not look with favor upon that.
Well, Mr. Secretary, do you know of any communist-dominated governments in the world which are not Soviet-dominated? And if this might get you a reprimand, or your reply might get you a reprimand from Bob Dye, I'm willing to excuse you from answering if you prefer.
Well,
I think it's very important for us to know on the basis of your avenues of information whether our government knows of any communist-dominated governments in the world which are not Soviet-dominated.
Well, may I answer this why, and that is that communist organizations throughout the world appear to act with a high degree of discipline and unanimity at almost the same time on almost exactly the same party line.
Beyond the probability of coincidence.
It would seem beyond the probability of coincidence.
That is where we stand on communism. Now, the balance of the hearing today was concerned mainly with why we bypassed the United Nations in planning to spend $400 million to keep communism from the Mediterranean. So this evening in the Senate, to silence this point of criticism, Senators Vandenberg and Connolly proposed a congressional declaration that the United States is not snubbing the World Security Council. This is Richard Harkness in Washington.
Next, a direct report on pressure for agreement on Germany, the pressure that goes along with our new active foreign policy. Here's Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
Secretary of State Marshall told the Council of Foreign Ministers today, in words that had a ring of history to them, that the time has now come for the Germans to establish their own provisional government. He said the process should begin at once, and he offered a three-point plan for return of the Germans to rule by themselves. Under the Marshall Plan, there would be first a temporary government, composed of the heads of each German state and province, then a constitution for a democratic, decentralized Germany, and finally, formation of a permanent constitutional government. Foreign Secretary Bevin introduced a similar proposal, the main difference being that the British plan provides for a constitution first before creation of a provisional regime. Both the Russians and the French withheld their views until tomorrow, and from both of them will come some objections. Before taking up German politics, the ministers agreed to Secretary Marshall's proposal that the Russians should be invited here to discuss their treaty. In fact, Foreign Minister Molotov said the Russians had already received their Soviet visas. But Molotov shied away from another American proposal for arbitration of claims to German assets in Austria. That one was put off until next Tuesday. And the one clear fact is that spring has come to Moscow on time today. The layers of snow and ice came unstuck in the warm, damp weather, and we're wading through slush almost as heavy as the diplomatic negotiations. This is Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
Life gets a lift in Washington when the calendar's right. To explain, here's David Brinkley.
In Washington today, we'd know it was spring if there weren't a calendar in town. Where other cities have their crocuses and robins, we have a sizable spring crop of queens and the commodities they're sent here to glorify. Today, for example, we have the maid of cotton, Miss Hilma C. of Memphis, who's here at our microphone. She won the title over the girls of 17 southern states, so the National Cotton Council sending her to Washington and to Paris, in both places to display a wardrobe of 12 hats, 12 dresses and suits, plus bathing suits and some unmentionables, all made of cotton. Today, Miss C was a guest on Capitol Hill, and she got there just in time to have a small bit of the show stolen by a truckload of daffodils sent up here by the DeKalb County, Georgia Chamber of Commerce, another Washington sign of spring. In other years, we've had citrus queens, tobacco queens, peach queens, and once we had a smelt queen sent by the fishermen of Escanaba, Michigan. But during the war, the smelt mysteriously disappeared, so there was no queen. This year, they're back in smaller numbers, so instead of a queen, we had a congressional smelt-eating contest. As you've heard, Representative Clarence Brown of Ohio ate 51 smelts and won the spring championship. Today, Miss C's schedule included a call at the White House, the Agriculture Department, the French Embassy, Capitol Hill, a fashion show, and an appearance at tonight's Cotton Ball with Senator Claghorn. Miss C, that sounds like awfully hard work.
It is a little strenuous, but it's so much fun, I haven't remembered to get tired.
You leave for Paris tomorrow?
Yes, to show the French our cotton fashions and to bring back to the United States some of theirs.
Do you speak French?
Not much of it.
Well, I don't imagine the prettiest girl in 17 southern states with a 97-piece wardrobe will need to talk very much.
I hope to impress the French with our cotton fashions, not my speech. Thank you just the same.
Thank you, Miss C., and we wish you and your cotton fashions all kinds of luck. This is David Brinkley, and that's what happened as spring came to Washington today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. That such important food elements as vitamins may become destroyed is unfortunate, to say the least. Yet that's exactly what can happen to some of the B-complex vitamins in food when improper methods of transportation, processing, and cooking are used. And the B-complex vitamins are among the food elements everyone must have for good nutrition and good health. These vitamins help the body convert food into energy and sound nerves, and they promote good digestion. Now, since the B-complex vitamins can be so easily destroyed, prevent a deficiency by getting your daily supply the one-a-day brand way. Take just one one-a-day brand vitamin B-complex tablet every day. Yes, just one tablet once every day. Take it with or after a meal for best results. Now, some like to take their one-a-day brand vitamin B-complex tablets with their breakfast, and then they can forget all about taking extra B-complex for another 24 hours. So get one-a-day brand vitamin B-complex tablets from your druggist and have every member of your family take one tablet every day. Now, remember that name, one-a-day brand vitamin B-complex tablets. Look for the big one on the gray package. Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Washington, the House Appropriations Committee, voted today to cut off, without a federal cent, Labor Department Conciliator Edgar L. Warren and all the sub-conciliators. They charge he is or was an admitted member of communist-inspired front organizations. And the House Un-American Committee heard two former communists and a committee investigator report today that one Leon Josephson, a New York lawyer, is a Soviet secret agent and a leader in a ring of passport forgers. Josephson himself has refused to stand and talk. The committee plans to cite him for contempt. Chicago grain prices got back on the prosperity track today. March wheat went up to $2.76 a bushel. Traders heard that corn plantings will not be as big as the estimators have figured them, and there were also reports that the government has bought 250,000 sacks of flour in the southwestern part of the country at $6.40 on the sack. Boy, oh boy, there's going to be more than one wheat queen this year at that price. And that's the news of the world. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
Here's a reminder of a program you'll want to hear every Sunday afternoon. Alka-Seltzer's Quiz Kids. Yes, for an amazing, interesting half hour, listen to the Quiz Kids every Sunday afternoon. The Quiz Kids broadcast over most of these same NBC stations. That's this coming Sunday afternoon, remember. Alka-Seltzer's Quiz Kids. This is Tom Moore speaking.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.